terrorists declare war on the United States.
Military officials here at the Pentagon are confirming that seven are dead. At
least armored vehicle stands guard.
Downtown New York in chaos.
The 7.0 quake was centered roughly 10 miles from the capital city.
We want the public to feel safe.
Thousands likely dead.
The world seems so unstable, so insecure. Everything is changing way too fast. But there are some things that are steadfast. Things that never change. God and His Word. Join Pastor Randy Reams as he shares truths from God's unchanging Word.
We are in Joshua chapter 10, verses 1 through 13. Joshua chapter 10, starting in verse 1. Now it came about when King, we'll try this one, Adoni-Tzedek, if I got the Hebrew right on that, king of Jerusalem heard that Joshua had captured Ai and had utterly destroyed it, just as he had done to Jericho and its king, so he'd also done to Ai and its king. And all the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were within their land. That he feared greatly because, that is the king of Jerusalem, feared greatly because Gibeon was a great city, like one of the royal cities. And because it was greater than Ai, and all of its men were mighty. And therefore, King Adoni-Tzedek, I know it doesn't spell that way, but that's the way the Hebrew says it. King of Jerusalem sent word to Horam, king of Hebron, to Piram, king of Jarmuth, to Japha, king of Lachish, to Deber, king of Eglon. Sounds like a Star Wars movie, a bunch of planets, you know. Okay, saying, come up to me, help me, and let us attack Gibeon, for it has made peace with Joshua and with the sons of Israel. So the five kings of the Amorites, that is the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon, gathered together and went up with their armies and camped by Gibeon and fought against it. Then the men of Gibeon sent word to Joshua to the camp at Gilgal, saying, do not abandon your servants. Come up to us quickly and save us and help us. I find it interesting. Joshua's name means Savior or salvation, and they asked for his help. Anyway, camp at Gilgal, saying, I did that. Help us. For all the kings of the Amorites that live in the hill country have assembled against us. So Joshua went up from Gilgal, and he and all the people of war with him, and all the valiant warriors. And the Lord said to Joshua, do not fear them, for I have given them into your hands. Not one of them shall stand before you. So Joshua came up upon them suddenly by marching all night from Gilgal, which we know in a straight line, 17 miles. So not in a straight line, I'm not sure how far a march that would be. And the Lord confounded them before Israel, and slew them with a greater slaughter than Gibeon, at Gibeon, and pursued them by the ascent of Beth Horon, and struck them as far as Azekiah and Makkedah, as they fled before Israel. And then they were at the descent of Beth Horon. The Lord threw large stones, or some of yours will say hailstones. It's used both here. It's called hailstone and just large stones, as in a rocks, from heaven on them as far as Azekiah. And they died, I'll bet. And there were more who died from the hailstones than from the sons of Israel that killed it with the sword. Then Joshua spoke to the Lord. In the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the sons of Israel, and he said in the sight of Israel, that's faith. He ain't saying this privately. He's saying it in front of everybody. O sun, stand still at Gibeon, and O moon in the valley of Ajalon. So the sun stood still, and the moon stopped, until the nation avenged themselves of their enemies. Is it not written in the book of Jasher? The sun stopped in the middle of the sky, and did not hasten to go down. For about a whole day, you may be seated. And I know I read a lot there, but there's more in the story. It would be nice to read there and get it all in context. But so these folks that they're attacking, and so were the Gibeonites, were what's called Amorites, okay? And so I just have a few things up there for you. Be honest, they have a hard time finding much artifacts within the Palestinian region. You get up into Syria and towards Babylon, they've got major cities of the Amorites they dug up, but those cities weren't attacked by Israel. So this is just a statue they have of a worshiper, and I give you this relief here. You can see, what do they look like? What are their culture? Do you guys, anybody know your history? Babylonians, that's right. Their history is they came from Ur, pretty much. And eventually, it's called the Amorite period during the Middle Bronze Age. The Amorites actually take over Babylon. And Hammurabi, the famous Hammurabi, the Code of Hammurabi, was one of these folks. Okay? And some argue whether they were all actual the same lineage, or it just became known as a group of people that banded together. Because before this, you had city-states. But these guys tended to band together and eventually under one king instead of just city-states. And so that was unique. So some argue whether they were genetically Amorites or just people that came under this pact. But one of the things I want to show you that is their god, Amuru. And that's actually his name spelt out in cuneiform. You guys know what that is, right? And I'll come back to that for a reason when we get going forward. But okay, so he was the son of the supposed Mesopotamian sky god, Anu. He was called the Lord of the Mountain. That doesn't ring a bell to anybody. Okay. But he was also the storm god. And according to some documents they found, he liked to eat truffles and raw meat. And I don't mind mushrooms with cooked meat, but I don't want raw meat. And he never lived in a house. He never had a place. So in some early forms of this, they didn't build temples to him because he didn't have a house. But that changes over time. Okay, and I have documentation of that if you want to know any of it. Okay? So this gives us a view. Now remember, they're up here at Gibeon. They're camped at Gilgal. And so these other kings, and if I recall, I think, is it Lachish? I went about 6 miles away. So here's where all these other kings are from. Okay? And they've come to camp at Gibeon. I showed you pictures of last time. That country's very hilly with a lot of ravines. Remember we talked about that at AI and we showed the back of the ravine. Look at me like you remember. Okay, the back of the ravine. And so this is hilly country. And I'll show you some pictures of it. But this gives it. Now all those kings traveled to Gibeon. They didn't go there to attack them necessarily, but they did eventually conquer those cities. We read that later in the chapter. But during this long day, we'll call it that, they attack at Gibeon, okay, as they came from Jericho. Now, notice it's the king of Jerusalem who initiates this pact. So what they've done here is there's been almost treason. These cities together were bonded together in a pact, and then Gibeon breaks that and makes a pact with the bad guys for them. It would be Israel, the good guys, all right? But makes a pact with them. And so this bothers them because the people of Gibeon were mighty warriors. Some argue, by the way, the Amorites are the descendants of giants. Thus, when the first 12 spies went in, remember there's giants in the land? Okay. So these guys are mighty warriors, and this was a pretty powerful city. I think it's important to understand that the king of Jerusalem means, his name here means, vision of peace. That's the King Jerusalem. That's what it would say. But his name means Lord of Righteousness. Okay. He gathers Israel's enemies together to fight against them. Many feel that he is a type, remember we've talked about type and anti-type, of the Antichrist. And what the dragon and the Antichrist do together, claiming to be the Lord, and gather the people together in the end against Israel. And it's a playoff, Melchizedek, who was the king of Salem before Jeru was added to it, okay, which means king of peace. But Hebrews tells us in 7, he is the king of righteousness. So this king has that same kind of, which they find strange. To be honest, scholars, even secular scholars, that's an odd name for a king like that. And so I just wanted to let you know that if you went and studied this section, many are going to take you to Revelation and show that type. I'm not taking the time to do that. Okay? So this is Lachish. They've actually dug it up. Eventually, it was conquered, you know, hundreds of thousand, or a thousand years later, something like that. But it, again, all these hills and cities we've looked at so far are built up on hills. Okay, so when it talks about them chasing them down, it's literally down. But again, I think it was the Assyrians that came back and took this over, and they had to build a ramp, a siege ramp, to get up there. Israel didn't have to do that. Why? Because God sent the enemies to them. And let me a little bit of a tangent. I hear this all the time. Well, Jesus hung out with sinners and prostitutes. No, he didn't. Nowhere in Scripture do you see him going to a house of ill repute. No, no, no. They came to him because of who he was and the message he told. Well, he went to Zacchaeus' house, tax collector, right? Yes, but Zacchaeus came to him first looking for him because of who he was and the message he brought. When Jesus travels across to this little island and there's a demon-possessed guy runs around naked in the graveyard, the demon-possessed guy comes to him. It's the message of Christ that draws the lost. That's what it does. Okay? So the enemy came to them. Now, don't tell me you've ever felt like the enemy hasn't come to you. You don't have to go find him. He'll find you. Amen. Oh, I know your stories. Don't look at me like you're blind. Okay? So anyway, I just wanted to show you. I had one also of one of the others, but this is actually a relief they found at Lachish. Now, the major cities, again, would be up where we call Syria. That's where they've dug up a lot of them and more remains of them than this. But the one thing I want to point out is they have chariots. For a long time, people argued over whether the Canaanite people had chariots. The Egyptians did, but the Canaanite. But then they dig up this stuff, and oh, guess what? The Bible's right. I don't know about you, but that sure looked like that. Part of it's cut off, but there was others that they actually have a chariot there. Okay? So, the Gibeonites call upon Israel to keep their promise. Now, why did they have to do that? Because they're just associated with the children of God. Pastor Jeffers of, I think it's Dallas First Baptist Church, they've been protesting in front of his church because he prayed for Trump before the election. So he's somewhat associated with Trump just because he prayed with him. And I would suggest that's probably one of the reasons they don't. I mean, there's various reasons people don't like Trump. Please don't. But I imagine it has part of it. And if you will send me your email, which I ask you all to do, I will send you. You can judge it how you want. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. But a fireman, a retired fireman in 2011 gave a prophecy about Trump being elected president. Okay, and I'll send it to you. You judge it. Okay, and I'm not putting a lot of weight in all that stuff necessarily, but it's just interesting to look at, and I'm not necessarily taking Trump's side. Okay, I didn't vote for either one of them, just to let you know. Okay, so but just being associated with God's people will get you in trouble. That's why people don't want to hang with you. Okay, and let's get real. You're the one student in school that won't cheat on the test. You're the one guy at work that won't go have drinks afterwards and get a little tipsy, do the sales deal. Okay, the other people know if they hang around you, they'll be associated with the nerdy kid that won't cheat. They'll be associated with the guy from the office that won't drink. And they know that brings judgment of their peers. Okay? So I think most of you know this. Many people, when they came to Christ, lost family and friends. Why? Did your relationship necessarily change with that friend or that family member? Do you still love them? Yes. The thing is, they know this. They'll be associated with you, and that will cost them. Oh, no. Go associate with Israel today. Make a treaty with Israel and see what happens. One of the reasons the Islamic countries hates America is just this same thing. We made a deal with Israel that we're going to, well, at least tell this recent president, we're going to stand by you. And so the rest of the world hates us for standing with God's children. And I think this is a difficult thing for people when they come to Christ. Well, you don't understand. If I come to Christ, I'll lose my job. You don't understand. If I come to Christ, my family will. If I come to Christ, I know you will. I know that. But you got to be willing to leave father and mother and sister and brother. Yeah, we only talk about the blessings of coming to Christ, not the cost, do we? So they call upon Israel to, now it doesn't necessarily say this when we read the pact, but since the pact that they made also meant, wait a minute, I don't mind defending you, but when you lied and tricked me? Okay, so I don't attack you. We've made that true. I understand that part, but wait a minute, you want to risk the lives of our sons, our fathers, our uncles for a pact they made with you? And you deceived, remember, we talked about that last week, Gibeon deceived Joshua to get this pact. Again, I say it's another thing. Okay, I made an agreement with you, I won't attack you. Well, that's cool because nobody gets hurt. But now you want me to defend you when you wronged me? That's a whole other story. I don't know if I can defend you when you've wronged me. Okay, and it's going to cost me something to defend you? And you lied to me? It's one of the most difficult things in unfaithful marriage. Wait a minute. He, she lied to me and you expect me to what? Did you make a covenant? Yes. Did they make a covenant? Yes. I'll keep moving. Then we find out that Joshua marches all night. Get this right. They march all night. What happens the next day? They get a double day. I don't know about you, but I'd be pretty tired from marching all night. What do you think you're doing, Josh? I just marched all night, and you want this day to go on even longer? It tells you not only did God do what he did in the natural, but he had to strengthen Israel to keep fighting. You march all night during the night with your army, with your backpack and your M4, not in those days, but you understand what I'm saying. The weight on your back, and you get there, and the battle begins, and then Joshua wants to make it longer. I know they're all godly, and not one of them complained, just like y'all, just like churches in America. I'm sure, I mean, they were all godly people, so I'm sure nobody complained. But then it says that God confounded them. Best way, confused them, panicked them, okay? It comes from a root word having to do with the mind. Okay? So God messed with their brains. Then it says that they chased them down this descent. So downhill, there's an upper and lower Beth Horon. And so they chase them down this way. That's where they're talking about when they say down the descent of Beth Horon. They fled downhill. I don't know about you, but if I ran down one of them hills, I'd probably fall down. You can go online and watch videos of people doing that. So in this process, so God's giving them victory. He's confounding them. But then he sends these hailstones. Now, scholars argue whether it was, you know, hailstones as in ice or just stones from heaven. Because the two words here I used, you notice one word says hailstones and one says large stones. That's the word for a rock, a large rock. So whether rocks started falling out of the sky or hailstones, I know this. Revelation 16 tells me God's going to rain 100-pound hailstones on earth at the end. Now, well, here's the amazing part. It only hit the bad guys. Good shot. Don't you think about that. Whatever it is that's falling out of the sky is hitting only the Amorites, not the Israelites, or the Gibeonites. God's a good aim. That's to me, that right there, I get into that part of it. You know, here's the other cool part. If Joshua hadn't been deceived and made a pact because he didn't listen to God, remember? He would have had to go take each one of these cities on in their city one at a time. God will use your stupid. He will use when you don't listen, when you're not seeking Him and doing it His way. Oh, there's somebody right now I know should be listening to this. You didn't do it God's way. God is still in it. I didn't say caused it. He's still in it. God now brings those five. They don't have to siege city walls. They come out in the open. Sometimes I would suggest your sin, your mistakes, brings things out in the open. Then you can address them. Then you can attack them. It's also interesting to me is these guys worshipped the weather god, remember? The storm god? The storm god, the god of the storm. And that's why he's associated with mountains, high places. Okay? And what does God use to get them? Their own god. Oh yeah, God will come get your god. He'll use it. Oh, I know, man. Okay? But here's also an interesting thing. What's the official punishment for blaspheming God? Stoning. Oh, you think your God's the one that controls the weather? You think it's man that changes the weather? Oh, come on. Let me show you what I can do. And they begin to rout these five kings. And then we get to verse 12. Now, Joshua's already had a conversation with God. He's learning something from his couple mistakes. He's already had that conversation. But here, Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered the Amorites to him and said in the sight of Israel, somewhere, Joshua, we don't know the content of that conversation. We just know this. When Joshua's done talking to God, he got enough faith up there to look at the sun and say, don't move. Notice, it isn't just the sun that didn't move. It's the sun and the moon. Now, in case you all don't remember, in what we call a Copernican or heliocentric universe, or in particular our galaxy, right? Sun, Earth moving around the sun, right? And it's turning this way. So if God just stops the Earth from turning, this moon is still moving. So he has to stop two bodies, minimal. The Earth from spinning and the moon. Okay? Now we can go through the science of what happens when the Earth moving at just over 23,000 miles an hour suddenly stops. Do you guys remember the laws of inertia? An object in motion tends to... Yeah, that's what you got a seatbelt for. Because as you're moving along and you stop, your body wants to keep going when the car stops. Okay? So you can go online and listen to the atheist people argue this is impossible because. The interesting thing, wait a minute, if you can stop the Earth, you could probably deal with the laws of inertia. See, they think God would stop the Earth and then leave the laws of inertia. Then you have problems with the tides. You stick the moon in one spot and stop it, that's a high tide for a long time. A really strong one. You have the magnetic field of the Earth is created, they think, by it spinning. They think. So you have a whole lot going on here. This isn't just stop the sun, if you will. So you have all these other things. But I don't know if you know this, and I'll read some quotes to you, that the heliocentric model has never been proven. How many of you knew that? Copernicus, the Earth moving around the sun and everything? That's never been proven. And it doesn't solve all the problems. For example, it might solve Mercury's irregular orbit, but it doesn't solve problems of other irregular orbits. And I did a lot of reading on this, and I was sparked by it originally, I got to give credit, by Bill Barr, who's one of our local teachers, been teaching for at Skyview for 30-something years. He's been on Matt's show with me. And he's the one that brought these things to my light. He's got a whole lot of books on this, okay? But these guys named Michelson and Morley did a study. And what's Degrassi's first name? The African-American fellow. You always see him on Nova. Oh, what's his first name? Yeah. He says that the Michelson-Morley experiments transforms physics as we know it. And I could send you the video where he says it if you want. Okay? Back in just at the end of the 1800s, a guy named Ernst Mach wrote something called Mach's Principle. Mach's Principle, excuse me, not Marx. Explaining this, that all the phenomena we see in a heliocentric model, the sun is the center, can be explained with the earth at the center. Now, I'm not trying to convince you. I'm just making a point here, and let me get there. So, British physicist, he earned his PhD on studying Einstein's general theory at University of Cologne. His name's Julian Barber, and his book, Absolute or Relative Motion, on page 266 says, "It is still remarkably difficult to say categorically whether the earth moves." They don't tell me that in school. The University of Zagreb in Croatia, not known for strong Christianity, they wouldn't have a motive. In 2013, put a whole study out, and they got a series of scientific articles, if you wanted to read them, on this kind of idea, saying, wait a minute, y'all haven't proven to us that we have a heliocentric model. Lincoln Barnett, The Universe and Dr. Einstein's, the name of the book published in 1949, quotes Einstein saying this, "We can't feel our motion through space, nor has any experiment ever proved that the earth is actually in motion." That's Einstein. He's smarter than me when it comes to this stuff. Now, his relativity theories bring all kinds of things into question, but anybody know who Stephen Hawking is? Yeah, the premier astronomer, physicist in our time. In The Grand Design in 2010, he goes on to explain that either model, heliocentric or geocentric, can explain all the phenomena.
This is Pastor Randy Reams of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. I want to thank you for joining us today for Truths from God's Unchanging Word. This broadcast is an outreach ministry of Kindred Bible Church. I'd like to invite you also to visit our website, kindredbible.org. There you can listen to today's broadcast as well as previous broadcasts. If you're being ministered to by the broadcast, I'd like to encourage you to let us know. You can email us at info@kindredbible.org, or you can write to us at Kindred Bible Church, P.O. Box 32, Nampa, Idaho, 83653. And I'd like you also to check us out on Facebook. Look at us over there and give us a like. So again, I want to thank you for listening to Truths from God's Unchanging Word.